At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
True or false? Donald Trump.
True. Sorry.
Okay. Well, that's a guess.
What hasn't he done?
Locked in.
Donald Trump fired a group of nuclear scientists by accident.
Sounds like something he would do. I'm saying true.
Okay, true. Matilda?
I'm going to say true because I know that you know, when they were doing their massive DEI purge, they accidentally sacked a load of people who were flagged as on probation, who'd basically just been promoted. So, yeah, very, very likely.
And Madge?
I'll go with true because they fired a load of people that were working on bird flu and now they need those people back. So
it is true. 1 point to everyone. Well done, everyone. Yeah. He did, and they can't contact them. They've lost their contact details.
Just smart. another way to die in the world of Trump.
Why are the missiles working, sir? We lost the scientists.
Do you think he's just pressing random buttons and firing people like Mr. Burns? Like
100%.
Okay, true or false, Matilda? Nigel Farage today said that Zelensky is a dictator. True or false?
I'm going to say false. I know Farage is in a very awkward position living in Trump's shadow, but he's, why did I say false? Yeah, I do think it's false. I think I'd have heard about it.
Are you sure about that?
You think he's too chicken to...
I think he's too chicken. Yeah, I don't... I think that he's aware he would be tying himself in a lot of tangles with stuff he said in the past. False.
Madge.
I'll go with false as well.
Helena.
I am also going to go with false, not because I'm jumping on the bandwagon, but because I didn't see it. But it does sound like something he would say.
Hedge your bets, Helena.
That's the thing, isn't it? You're sort of like, is he that much of a sucker? Is he going to suck up to Trump that much? It is false. He did not say it. But interesting in the gray area again.
Mm.
Number three, Jason Atherton, the famous chef, said sexism does not exist in the kitchen world in hospitality.
True.
So I was actually going to go Madge, but all right.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. I don't know who that is. I'll go with true then because you sounded like you know what you're talking about. So
Madge, you're saying?
True. I'm saying true. I agree.
Helena, you're saying false. True.
No, I'm saying true. Definitely true.
Matilda?
I don't know who he is.
I don't know who he is either.
I'm terrible with celebrities. I'm going to say false because then I get to win. Yeah,
this is rigged. Right. This is rigged. Stop the count. Stop the count now. It's rigged. This is. I see a fix.
And otherwise it's a tie and like whatever then.
Yeah.
It is true. He did say it. And no. 70 female chefs came forward and said, this is absolute garbage. And I worked in hospitality for a decade and it's there. It's just
that's terrible.
Like, I don't believe it can have gone. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely.
It's terrible for sexism, true. But it's also terrible because I didn't win.
Yeah, feels like a loss on two levels for you, pal.
Yeah. Kicking me when I'm down.
My God. Okay.
Yeah, no, just quickly. He said it didn't exist because he hadn't seen it, which really made me laugh.
Probably committing it. Probably, yeah. He's probably doing it.
There's a long, it must be a long list of things he thinks doesn't exist. Like the moon. Wait, no, we see the moon. Like, I don't know, Antarctica?
Never been there, so it doesn't exist. Yeah. Not seen it. I don't see air, so it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Oxygen? Not sure.
Yeah. Final question. Labour want to bring in mandatory etiquette lessons for people for refugees coming into the country so they can adapt.
That's gnarly, that is. That's a gnarly question.
Who are you coming to there?
Helena.
Oh, that is tricky. That is so tricky. Okay. I could see it being something that they would do, but I think they've been putting in place so many anti-migration policies that I don't think that they're going to be bothered right now putting in place one that, you know, for however patronizing it is, might actually help. So I'm going to go false.
Matilda?
Yeah, again, knowing what I know about the migration system, I would say... Yeah, well, it does sound like the kind of headline that they would consider a win. I don't think that they're going to be prepared to put money into training people in English etiquette, given that they don't provide, English language lessons, which might be a better starting point.
Well, I guess you could have thank you and please as part of those English language
Yeah,
lessons.
it's true.
How to queue up without
That's
getting
true.
angry. So what's your answer, Matilda?
It's a false from me.
That's false. Madge?
Can you repeat the question again? Have they confirmed it, or is it one they're thinking about?
Labour want to bring in mandatory etiquette lessons for refugees and immigrants.
I will say it's true.
It's false.
Oh,
Fuck.
yes.
Fuck, I was so close. I was so close to winning that. It feels like something they would say. That's the problem. Like, they
It
want
does.
to bring something in, and then it just doesn't get put in.
Well, so they do it for the headline, but don't
Yeah, pretty
actually
much. I mean,
implement
that's all
it.
they do, innit? So.
What's
They
happening?
look like conservatives in reform, basically, which is fucking
Yeah.
awful. This is why people are getting turned off by Labour at the moment.
You'd think that
Absolutely.
Labour would have seen that, that was coming, that they would lose their Labour voters when they stopped being Labour, but apparently not.
I'm starting to see YouTubers saying they've had enough, and social media influencers being like, I don't want to be with Labour anymore. We need a new party on the left.
And
I
when
definitely.
YouTubers say it, then it's
Well, then
happening.
it's everything then,
It's
isn't it?
facts. It's facts. We're on the pulse. We're on the pulse of everything. Never out of touch.
We
To
are
be
the
fair, though,
change.
what have they done really that they didn't say they would do? Like, apart from the winter fuel allowance, which there's no confirmation on that anyways, what stuff have they done? Like, what have they actually lied about? It's not a lot. She said the fiscal rules are the most important thing, which is true. We know that. They said they were going to bring net immigration down. Okay. Like, they haven't really done anything they said they wouldn't do.
Are you
So
talking
the
about
real argument is you're just not happy with the stuff they're doing, even though they said they would.
look, when they were campaigning to come in?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't say that they were gonna, publish videos deporting
That's true.
migrants. They didn't say, that they were gonna make, humiliation and deportation like one of their core policies. So for people who
Yeah.
like voted them in on the basis of the immigration debate, which I think a lot of people did, that's a real
And the
betrayal.
tax increase, which they
They
said
didn't
they
say they
weren't going to
wouldn't.
do, and then they were like, oh, there's a 40 billion black hole, and we're like, well, everyone told you there was because of Brexit, to
They
which they
have a
were then,
dodge.
oh, we're not going to charge you, but then we are because we're just going to charge businesses,
They have a
which will
dodge for that
charge
one.
you.
They have a dodge for that one as well. Like, I saw Matless Corner Reeves about it, and she said it wasn't on. It's not on employees. It's on employers, and they have a dodge for that. So if you're not happy with these policies, like, fair enough. Some of them they didn't say they would do it, but they didn't say they wouldn't. Like, they haven't raised income tax because they said they wouldn't. So how mad could you be? You voted for people that were washed, and that people told you they were washed, and it turns out they don't know what they're doing. Like I said from the jump, the fiscal rule is a bad idea because debt to GDP is nonsense. And then everyone's like, no, it's a smokescreen. And you're like, she seems pretty committed, bro. Seems pretty committed. So, that's all they ran with.
I think it took a while for some people to catch up, to be fair. Like I did see people, you were saying this before when they were campaigning to come in. I did see people talking about Labour is not going to be Labour before they were coming in, but I think it just did take a while for some people to catch up.
Which
I
is crazy. Like, you think about it, like, they've told you all the things they're going to do. And people thought they were the Tories where they're going to deviate from stuff. And then they get mad about the stuff they said they were going to do. Like, if she tells you, if Reeves says the fiscal rules is the most important thing and getting debt to GDP down is the most important thing, you knew there was no growth plan because we went over it in detail. There's nothing there that would grow the economy. So what do you do? Austerity then. You cut where you can. And so that's all she was going to do. And so it's not a hard one to figure out. Like, it was all there. That was the problem. No, people just didn't want to see it.
I think you're totally right on economic issues. But I speak probably for a lot of people who considered immigration one of the four running issues. And on immigration, honestly, like everything that they're doing right now can be framed as massively deceptive in terms of the way that they presented themselves in the run-up to the election and in the opposition. Their constant criticism of Tory immigration was this: where is the humanity in this? You need to find the balance between border security and safe refuge and integration and positive immigration. That has all just gone like piss out the window. So on that front, I would say it's that we were fully hoodwinked.
I don't think they were that positive on immigration, though. They were talking about cutting net immigration in the first place. They never talked about safe routes of entry. I think they were talking about smashing the gangs before the election. Could be wrong on that. I'll take a no if I'm wrong. But I think they were talking about smashing gangs, and that was the way to do it. So, like, when we look at it beforehand, this is all the stuff pretty much they said they were going to do. It was just, I think people hated the Tories so much that they were blind to see it. And they always
Yeah,
thought Labour would
definitely a
move to the
factor.
left. naturally. Like, you know, they're like, oh, Tony Blair, you know, said he wouldn't do this thing and he did it. Cool. Like, you know, I bet there was never a point where he said, I wouldn't follow international law and take us into an illegal war. Do you know what I mean? Like, people always assume like they'll do the right thing because it makes sense. And then
That's
it's
not how
like,
it
no,
works.
politicians are idiots. Like, we know this. Like, the worst people always get put in charge of these countries and they do a bad job. And then people get like, they become so apathetic. Like, I talk to people at work about it, and like, because we're also engaged in it, I feel it as well. Like, oh, okay, you're going to vote Labour? No. You're going to vote Tories? No. Who are you going to vote for, the Lib Dems or Greens? They don't really run where I live. And it's like, you can't win. And then everyone's kind of hung up on somehow Labour doing a proportional representation vote in this parliament. It's like, they were never going to do it, because why would you want some of the power? They want some of the power all the time. Like, do you know what I mean? They want all the power some of the time, sorry, because they want to be in charge fully. That's what they want. This system helps them. In a PR system, it's guaranteed they'll be in a coalition. Coalitions are trash because you compromise and it causes all sorts of problems. They want absolute power. That's
I
all
don't
it is.
know. I don't know if I'd say coalitions always cause problems. I think at least with the Libs, we can go two ways on that and say they made some huge errors when they were in the coalition.
Oh yeah.
They clearly put some brakes on the Conservatives from going completely doolally. I
It
think
didn't
that's.
help them though. They got lit up in that next election. Like, that was I watched it. I was quite young when that election happened, right? There was a massacre. Like, their leader lost their seat.
But you
Yeah,
know, there are a
like,
lot of
yeah.
countries. There are a lot, you're right. I mean, that really screwed over the Lib Dems, and but there are a lot of countries that operate like all the time on coalition. Look at Germany. You know, Germans look at our two-party system and think, well, that's insane. And
Yeah.
maybe that is, I think that there's clear evidence that they're right. Shall we do the intro? Welcome everyone to the Sunday Roast, and we have two excellent guests joining us this week. Matilda, could you please introduce yourself?
Hi everyone, I'm Matilda Manson. Should I say like what I do?
Please,
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm a journalist. I specialize in immigration. I previously worked as a humanitarian aid worker. I host a podcast called Media Storm, which is kind of like another current affairs show, except we bring into the studio the most important and most overlooked voices in the story, the people living it. So if we're talking about immigration, we'll have migrants and refugees in the studio. If we're talking about criminal justice, we'll have criminals in the studio, former criminals in the studio. You get the gist.
Awesome. Helena.
I'm Helena Wardia. I am the other host of Media Storm, which Matilda has just given you a very thorough introduction to, so no need for me to do that. I am also a journalist and I am passionate about social justice, particularly for women and other minorities.
And my magnificent co-host, Madge.
Yeah, I'm Madge. I run the Big Madge Studios YouTube channel where we cover a lot of British politics. Don't really have guests as such. That's what this show's for. Obviously, me talking into a microphone. But when we do have guests and things on, Alex is normally there.
I normally am, and we're going to start talking about Trump.
Oh,
The Donald.
that broke the
Yeah.
bubble in the room.
God, I haven't talked about Trump in ages.
No,
Yeah, like 1 minute.
does it
What is he
feel?
even doing these days?
Does it feel like he's now been in power for years, even though it's been a month?
Can we remember a time before Trump?
I remember Sleepy Joe. Yeah, just
Yeah.
about.
I think it does feel like he's been in power for years because potentially the hangover of things that he did when he was first in power have just carried on.
That's true.
Mean, we touched on it in the true and false round just before we got into the main part. He sacked 40 nuclear, I think it's 40 or 20 nuclear scientists, and they lost the contact details. He sacked, was it 20 or was it the entire department for bird flu?
I think
And
there's a
then
lot of them.
he's currently talking about burning $500 million worth of COVID equipment and testing equipment. What the f? And then
How did
he's
they
called
come up
himself
with this?
king. I mean, go on, Matilda.
I was thinking, how did they come up with this? Some of it feels so obscure. I think it's very focused group as well. I mean, you know, all of it is about scoring points in the headlines. I think so much of it is about getting a headline that looks like a win, and then who cares how it actually materializes on the ground? Oh shit, we're now scrambling to find all the people that we hired. But you know, as long as the media isn't going to follow up on that properly, or the people that we want to vote for us aren't going to read the follow-up story, then actually they're not the kind of policymakers who care.
No, it's funny how we've been pushing back though in the UK, and as we said as well in the true and false round, Farage has disappeared into the ether. He's gone very quiet because he doesn't want to call Zelensky a fucking dictator. Just
everyone, I feel so. I think it's the response from world leaders or European leaders to, you know, all of Trump's international flexing has been so pathetic, like so petty, and also so much misreading how Trump operates. He responds well to strength. People who've like dissed him and insulted him are the people he ends up cuddling up to. It's not just like little diplomatic whispers that counter him without actually contradicting him that get through to him. You know, Zelensky, a dictator. Okay, so Keir Starmer releases like a statement that honestly Trump probably isn't even going to see, that doesn't mention Trump by name. Even when Trump, you know, decided he was going to turn Gaza into his Riviera of the Middle East, and Starmer, others said, you know, it would be a terrible thing to displace Gazans. No one actually, you know, they didn't actually say Trump is out of line. So it's not just, you know, Farage who's built his career in the shadow of Trump. It is also leaders who are supposed to represent everything Trump doesn't stand for, who are still sitting back in silence.
And then on top of that, he's not criticized Putin. He's called Zelensky a dictator. What's he said about Russia? The guy like literally whacks people. And people forget, I want to bring it up as much as possible. Putin is one of the few guys, I think if only the only guy, who has dumped chemical weapons or chemical grade material over the UK. No one else has done that. And yet we're then sat there going, yeah, it's all right. You can call Zelensky a dictator. Uh-huh. And it's, yeah, I mean, I'm just wild. Helena, go on. I can see you want to jump in.
Yeah. I mean, Matilda, you were talking about the weak reaction of politicians, but I also think there's a kind of, I don't know if we can call it weak, but the reaction of the media is also very interesting on this topic, because these kind of escalations in the situation regarding the US, Russia and Ukraine has meant that the media has kind of stepped up its fact checking a bit, right? And I have, you know, finally seen that, for example, BBC Verify has fact checked Trump's claims about Zelensky and Trump's claims about Zelensky's approval rating and whether or not he's a dictator. That's what they're asking in the media. And it's interesting that they're kind of asking that question and nobody is really able to be like, this is fucking ridiculous. You know, that should be the headline, really. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is insane. And it's almost, I feel like the media can barely kind of keep up with the unhinged things that Trump is saying. And it's hard to try and sort out what we should be fact checking and what is so ridiculous that fact checking it will almost give it like a possible legitimacy. We saw that, Matilda, we spoke about it on a recent Media Storm episode with BBC Verify and Trump's DEI initiatives, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was a piece BBC Verify did after Trump immediately blamed the first of several plane crashes that his administration has seen on DEI initiatives.
Yes.
And, yeah.
And the BBC were fact-checking not whether there was a causal link between them, but whether or not there were any DEI initiatives in the first place. And this is kind of how the right or the far right have such a chokehold on the media, because they kind of make all these ridiculous claims and say all these awful, outrageous things, and then kind of newsrooms like run around after them to report on the claims and blow up the claims. And then really important stories and facts getting kind of pushed down and down the pecking order to make way for these attention-seeking claims.
Did you find that? So we didn't get a chance to ask you about your origin story. Make you sound like a superhero.
Oh, yes.
Because obviously, like, you brought up the right-wing press. You guys both met at the Evening Standard. Is that correct? Can I verify that? Do I need to go on BBC Verify?
You don't.
You can BBC Verify. They've done loads of backstory stuff on us. We are a big deal to them.
Yeah, that's right. Matilda and I were both working as video journalists at the Evening Standard. And really what happened, yeah, the Media Storm origin story, is that when we were working there, it was during the time... under a lot of times, but it was during a time where small boat crossings were in the news a lot.
They'd just begun. It was the first summer of the Channel migrants.
Yeah. And Matilda, you know, with her background in specializing in immigration, saw a problem in that.
Yeah, I had actually gone into journalism specifically because of the like difference I'd observed between what the refugee crisis looks like on the ground and what it looks like in the media. So when I was working at The Standard and we were covering so-called channel migrants, I noticed that we were putting out dozens and dozens and dozens of articles about so-called channel migrants without ever including a single quote from an actual channel migrant in any one of them, which is just on a very superficial level, terrible journalism, because the first thing you learn in journalism is, you know, you've got to get all sides of the story, speak to the people involved. But that is where we're at with how we engage with the refugee situation. You know, refugees have become so dehumanized, disregarded, that journalists don't even notice they are not approaching them for comment. So I raised this to Helena, and Helena was like, that's so true. And that actually applies to quite a few different topics as well.
Mm. The main one I thought of straight away was it applies a lot to the transgender community. A lot is written about them, and you know, people from the trans community are very rarely spoken to, and that's kind of where the idea of MediaStorm was born. And then, you know, Matilda got made redundant, I quit, and the rest is history.
Did you get made redundant because you told Osborne or whatever Russian oligarch where to stick it?
Depends on your reading of history. Yeah, I mean, I joined at a time, you know, when The Standard was already, in their own words, hemorrhaging money. So they did a mass redundancy. But
it was also the pandemic, right?
Yeah, there were other issues I had with migration coverage. For example, we used the term illegal migrant. This was before there was even a UK law criminalising it. So it was completely factually incorrect. There was no legal basis on which to call someone claiming asylum an illegal migrant. I wrote a letter to the editor. I said our supervisor didn't do anything about it. I got frustrated. I wrote a letter to the editor, an email. Luckily, Helena edited it for me, made it a little bit gentler, but it was not a gentle email. And I did actually end up sitting down with, this is the digital editor, and going through it point by point, and we made some headway on some things and we didn't on others. But you know, also they definitely couldn't afford most of the people that they had working for them at that time.
Definitely couldn't afford you guys now, right?
Damn straight.
I mean, I want to bring in the documentary that you're in, but I think there's something to bring in as well to all of you about Constantine. Is it Constantine Kissin? Is that how you pronounce the surname? Where you said Rishi Sunak wasn't English.
Yeah.
I want your thoughts. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I just want to hear thoughts on this.
Matt? I mean, Helena, I think you have to. Okay, I want to know what you think first, Helena, because I mean, ultimately, what this guy was saying, right, was English is an ethnic racial identity. And if you're not white, then you definitely can't be English.
Yeah, I mean, hearing comments like that being spread in the media is a bit of a sucker punch. I can also, you know, defer to Madge at this point as well. But it's ridiculous, really. I mean, I have to say it's probably the first time I would ever defend Rishi Sunak. And also the first time I'd ever defend Fraser Nelson, right? He was this is the other person in the clip, and he used to be the editor of The Spectator. So like, I can't believe I'm going to sit here and praise the ex-editor of The Spectator. But yeah, you know, he was saying, of course he's English. What are you talking about? And Constantine Kissin said, how is he English? He's Hindu and he's brown. I mean, I'm not sure I really have to justify why he's English, right?
He also I think that, you know, there's one thing that at the beginning he was expressing his own vile opinion, like, fine, it's his opinion, and Fraser Nelson is like more than intellectually equipped to tear it apart. But then what he did after is he proceeded to go on and say that this is everyone's opinion. Actually, this is what the vast majority of people think in every country in the world. So firstly, as soon as you say hyperbole like that, in every country in the world, well, you are telling us that you clearly haven't fact-checked what you're talking about, because that's just a task that no one's going to take on. But it's also not true. I think that the Guardian looked into this years ago. I mean, this was like during Brexit. How do people see Englishness? And 90% of Brits think it has nothing to do with ethnicity and race. So, you know, it's not just that we're platforming, these views or having these debates, you know, that this debate has become normalized or is on its way to becoming normalized in a way that it has not been for a long time. I'm talking about our parents' generations. That's not even a normal thing to think anymore. No. But it is being done in this post-truth era where you can just combine, you can present opinion as fact. You can blur that line very freely in news media today. You know, and I say news media with inverted commas, it's this GB news type of news where, you know, journalists
facts don't matter, feelings do.
Facts don't matter, feelings do, but my feelings are facts.
And when a minority has a feeling, that is not a fact.
Yeah.
Madge?
Yeah, with a lot of this stuff, it's all constructs anyways. Like, how do you define something? Like, how many generations do you have to go back, etc.? Like, it doesn't make sense. Someone is trying to argue, well, you know, they would accept Elon Musk here because he's South African, but he's white. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't get it. So it's just people who want to accept certain types of white people. So I think it's non-Slavic white people. I think that's how it works. But then, you know, how far back do you go? What if they've got, like, you know, ancestors that are from different minority backgrounds? It doesn't really make sense, to be honest with you. I see Ash Sarkar gets it a lot as well. And then her argument was, when I hear auto glass repair, I say auto glass replace, which I found really funny because I do that as well. So
Who doesn't do that?
Yeah, so I don't know. I just see it as one of them dumb arguments people make, like when they're trying to like attack like minority groups. Is like, oh, you're not really English. It's like, please define English, because when you guys were getting battered by the Germans, you know, who did you call up? Do you know what I mean? Like, whose mans were there? Do you know what I mean? When people need to help. So like, you know, if, you know, please define Englishness. How many generations are we going back, etc.? Because last time I checked, the monarchy's of German heritage.
Yep.
So are they English as well? Like, how far back do we have to go here?
Got a few Nazi sympathisers in there as well.
Mm. And also,
plus some of those in the White House, so, you know.
Yeah. Helena, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I find it, you know, very interesting that they're sitting there debating whether Rishi Sunak is English, but they're not. You know, Boris Johnson was born in America. No one's asking if he's English.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
And the thing is also, like, we shouldn't be having this debate again. And actually, you know, this is an issue. We're not actually having this debate again. This is a very, very, very fringe view, and I wonder whether we should even like indulge it with undermining it on intellectual or logical or cultural grounds, when actually because doing so in a sense like legitimizes it, or it invites rebuttal from that very, very small but loud group of people who agree with it, and then that is just becomes an endless, you know, back and forth. And maybe actually what we should just be saying is hilarious. What's next?
It's interesting because I've had a few friends whose parents were from India or Sri Lanka, and they came up in random points in my life and said, I'm not English. And we were looking at them going, but you were born in London, right? Or you were born in Oxford, right? And they were going, yeah. And we're like, the fuck are you talking about? And it's really odd to have them say that and then have him say something so archaic and backward. I think one of the interesting things, I was going to do a history lesson. I'm not going to do it now. I will say this. Musk is also on Twitter saying that he's almost like on the opposite end of the spectrum. He was coming out and saying that white South Africans are Africans when they seem to be getting pushback over that. And I was like, the right wing and the far right are just nuts. They don't know what they're saying. There's no cohesion in what they're saying. You know, a democratically elected leader is a dictator. Up is down. You don't know where to go with it.
There's also no thought behind, you know, saying something like, as the daughter of a first gen and second gen immigrant, you know, there's just no thought in somebody throwing something so callously out there that, like, you can't possibly be English if you're brown and a Hindu, you know. And I do think that I agree with you, Matilda. It's like, why we're giving it airtime. But I also think it is, you know, that kind of clip that kind of podcast, that kind of rhetoric. It is a bit of a cultural marker on how previously unacceptable ideas have become mainstream. So I do think it's worth speaking about, if that makes sense.
Oh, it's definitely. Very difficult, isn't it, to know where that balance goes? Because you sort of look at how someone like, okay, here's your history lesson.
Do it, I love it.
You look at the rise of Hitler, and there were free speech limitations in Germany. They just weren't enforced, mainly because a lot of the judges were left over from the previous government, which was the Kaiser in Germany, and the German Empire. And they were predominantly right-wing. You know, they're backing the idea of a monarchy and therefore a dictatorship. It's just backed by religion. And you sort of go, there's that fine line, isn't there, with free speech as well? And part of the reason they didn't take down Hitler was because even though he was saying absolute wackadoodle stuff and they were giving it airtime, they didn't enforce anti-racist laws. And the flip side, you've also got this thing that's coming through about the demands of free speech and being able to hear it out and then give it debate and then knock it down in the debate. And I just, it's interesting because you were talking about the media. The media is so skewed and it's warping people. And here comes the segue, Matilda, into your documentary. Wasn't it wild doing the horribly named, what was it called again? I keep forgetting.
Go back to where you came from.
Oh, shit. Sorry, guys. I better sleep then.
Yeah, I'm off too.
Sorry, guys. I'm up.
I'm third generation Scottish, so I better leave as well.
Oh, right. This is going to be bugger off.
It's a solo podcast.
It's the Matilda show. I just find that when I'm trying to do a video on this at the moment where I'm looking at manufactured consent. And when I watched that documentary, and I've gone over it two or three times now, it was so interesting watching how they changed their thought process. And the thing that kept coming out, at least from two of them, oh, I haven't read the headlines in a few weeks, months. And therefore you're like, right, so you've had manufactured consent. This is what Noam Chomsky talks about. I won't go into the detail. Well, you can go into the simple thing. You keep hearing the same thing over and over again. You start to believe it. That's the simplicity. And he went, oh, I haven't heard that for so long. I haven't read the headlines. Then he tries to convince a truck driver. And you could see the truck driver ain't buying it. It's just, I've read that in a paper over and over again. And then you had the, and forgive me for the name, the Welsh lady.
Jess.
She said, once she started to get over the fear that obviously had been created through the press, she'd started to realize that the online stuff, in her own words, was total shit. Mm-hmm. And that she'd been indoctrinated. And it's manufactured consent again. So, I mean, tell us about the trip and how you felt about it. We'll go on to that. But I just thought it really interesting that we've been touching on the peripheries of this topic. Yeah. But to me, it's manufactured consent. And this is one of the problems that you had with Nazi Germany and not shutting these conversations down. And sometimes it's important to have those topics. And sometimes I'm like, you can't be going around saying mad shit and making out as fact. We don't allow flat earthers to teach fucking science. Why on earth is racism being given breathing space in our press? Sorry. So Matilda, yeah, tell us about that experience.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, actually that is, in a lot of words, kind of what it came down to for me. For me, this was a, not desperate, but very serious bid to work out how to change people's minds and to test a theory I had about that. And I've been thinking about this, you know, a lot for a decade since I started working in this world. I've worked, you know, on the front lines, on the ground, in the media, in NGOs. You know, this is a real thing that affects real people's lives. And to me, I think very carefully about how to go about it in a way that actually will result in change. And when I was working in the camps and really struggling and thinking, okay, I can't do this forever, what am I going to do? I thought about going to work in a think tank to strategize on policy reform. And I realized doing the research that there are already a lot of great minds in that field who have come up with a lot of great policy solutions, but they never get turned into actual policy because leaders continually reject them because they think it is going to be political suicide for them to actually advocate for any kind of increase or establishment of refugee migrant intake. And so the issue there is a communication one, it's a media one. And when I was on the documentary, I was traveling with Jess, who you mentioned, and Nathan. And they are exactly the kind of person that I sort of hoped I would be with, because they are people who have very, very, or had very, very strong anti-migrant views that were not based off real life experiences or having met refugees, but they came from rational places and they didn't come from just like blind hate. Okay. Yeah, they said some pretty awful things, but it was not motivated by just like blind racist hate. It was the result of the information that they have been absorbing passively and actively for years and years and years and years through our media. And that meant, well, I believe that meant those views would collapse very quickly, or, well, those views would collapse when they saw the realities of the refugee journey, and when they actually met people and spoke person to person with the people that they had such villainous, stereotyped, abstract views of because of what they'd read in the media. And, you know, I don't want to be going around giving spoilers, but that is exactly what happened. And my role in that was not to constantly yell at them that their views were wrong and tell them why their views were wrong, but to have faith that the truth, that empathy, that meeting people who can advocate for themselves much better than I can, was gonna change their minds. Like, you know, it changed my mind many, many, many years ago when I actually was lucky enough to have the exposure earlier on in my life. And my job was really much more to actually like listen, because also in this debate there's a massive class gap, and the documentary didn't really go into that enough, but between me, Jess and Nathan, there's a big class gap, and I think that a lot of people who have those views are quite sick of being told by people who don't necessarily know the struggles they've dealt with in life that that they're wrong to feel the way they feel. And then there's pride as a factor, defensiveness as a factor, and actually listening sometimes gets a lot further in taking away that barrier, taking away the pride effect, and it makes it easier for people to step out of the trenches and actually realize that this is not always the political issue, this is sometimes just a human issue, and on human issues most of us actually do just feel the same way.
Amazing rundown.
Unbelievable.
Okay.
I feel like I've just listened to like one of the great political speeches of our time. I don't know. Like, God.
Oh, thanks. But you know, I'm thank you for actually giving me the space to say that as well, because it's a documentary that rightly a lot of people have a lot of opinions on, and I had no editorial control, and I find it quite difficult to watch sometimes. That's why I did it, and I believe actually on having done it that was the right thing.
Yeah, look, like we can straight up say, you know, I can tell you how nervous Matilda was before agreeing to do this and before leaving to go and do this, and also how nervous I was, you know, for her. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, like, having watched all four episodes, I'm so happy you did it. And I also think that, okay, yeah, it's a Channel 4 documentary. It's, you know, as Matilda alluded there, editorial control. There were a few things that were, you know, maybe cut a little interestingly, etc. But overall, I feel like the heart of it, the message, it really got across. And, it, you know, hopefully some people who would not have sat down to watch a straight up documentary about the refugee crisis may have sat down to watch this. And I think that's worth it.
Do you think it's going to change any minds, people watching that?
I mean, from somebody who just simply watched the show, I mean, obviously I am pro-immigration, pro-refugee, but from somebody watching the show, I actually feel like I learned from Jess and Nathan in particular. They were mm-hmm. the two in Matilda's group, because, you know, when Nathan said, you know, I'm a lorry driver, and if I have a refugee in my lorry and they get, you know, I get caught, I get fined £10,000 per refugee. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that is a, you know, policy of the hostile environment. But at the same time, I completely understand then Nathan's fears. And then it was very helpful to see somebody express those fears, and then to realize that the people that have fears about refugees are not just Twitter bots, you know, they're not just faceless trolls that are sitting in the dark. They're people that drive lorries. They're people that live in a village in Wales, you know, like Jess, where, you know, there's a hotel at the bottom of her garden housing refugees, and she's scared about, you know, having men in her village because she has had very bad experiences with men. So, you know, I actually found it very helpful because I saw these people were not abstract concepts, basically. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say whether, you know, Joe Bloggs sitting down would change their mind. But I essentially, net, I think it was worth it.
I have had messages from people who've said it has changed their mind.
Wow.
So
Channel 4 and obviously yourself nailed it. If it's even convinced a few hundred people, because I mean the amount of trash that we're seeing in the news is just, it's unreal. It's hard. It's like, it's a never ending tide of crap that people who are doing podcasts and other social media to push against it.
Sometimes I feel like people have stopped trying to convince, like people on the left or whatever they are, stop trying to convince and just trying to win the debate. Like, there's a study that came out this week. It made the front page of The Guardian this week. About sort of political strategy on the left, and it was saying, you know, people who identify as left liberals, which is probably, you know, a lot of us and people we know, firstly are the most likely to not want to cooperate with anyone who disagrees with them, even on an issue they agree. You know, they won't campaign side by side with, say, a conservative or whatever. But also, they're also much more likely to overestimate how many people around them agree with them. And that means that, you know, instead of working to persuade and convince people who don't agree with us, there's a sort of a let's seek refuge in one another, or let's just, you know, it's really important, I think, that we focus on how pragmatically do we persuade.
It's funny as well, because it was the exaggeration of those numbers where it was making it out as if there was like hundreds of thousands. And then Zoe Gardner's been on and she's always pointing out it's half the size of Wembley a year. And then they're making out that they can't deal with it, but they can deal with Ukrainians. And then you go, well, if they can deal with the Ukrainians and they can deal with Hong Kong, what's the issue with the other parts of the world? And then you bring the fact, which I'll bring. Yeah. It's literally skin deep bullshit.
That's the answer. It's not said enough. Yeah.
It's not. And it should be. And it's sad that it's not. And it's wild that it's not. And it's that level of fear that's been brought in. Go on, Madge.
With a lot of this stuff, I think immigration's really easy for the media to tackle. Because like you guys were saying earlier, I think it's you either platform it and you argue against it as best you can, like someone like Mehdi Hasan would do. He's really good at that kind of stuff. Or you don't platform people. If you're not going to be a strong host who's going to give facts and actually explain things to people, if people are like, oh, I want to cut immigration, it's like, cool, how are you going to build a house when you don't have enough tradespeople? Oh, we'll train people here. It's like, cool, if you want to become a builder, it's going to take you, what, 3, 2 to 5 years, depending on, like, if you want to do, like, bricklaying and stuff. So you're going to have to wait 5 years minimum. Good luck with that, buddy. So, you know, I think you either be a strong host or be a strong person who's going to combat that stuff, or you just don't platform it. That's the best way to deal with that stuff. I think with the media and, like, you know, when I saw Laura Koonsberg talk about maxing out credit cards and shit, I'm like, you don't know anything about economics. Just sit outside. You know, when I see Peston comment on talking about herd immunity, I'm like, cool, you're not a scientist. Go sit outside. You know, stuff like that. So stop talking about shit you have no other understanding about. Bring on experts. That's your job. Like, bring on people who actually know what they're talking about. Like the debate I saw with over COVID, when they had one of the government scientists and a guy, I think he was Spanish, and he goes, herd immunity will literally kill people. You're stupid. Like, he was like, you guys are insane. And he couldn't believe it. So have people on that actually know what they're talking about. And like I said, I think the immigration stuff is so easy for me to say, look, net immigration is up. And then everyone's like, well, I can't get a house because of that. It's like, there are so many reasons you can't get a house, and immigration probably isn't one. The other problem is, you know, like your documentary was saying, there's a lot of people, these are real people, because there was a clip, you know, Nico's Defense League, this lady was complaining about immigrants, a really famous clip, right? And then he goes, oh, they took your teeth as well, right? As a joke. And she goes, yeah. And it's just hatred. Alex, I beg you to put that one in. Trust me, it's a banger clip. I love Nico. He's my boy. But it's so easy for the media to kind of portray it, because A, they've got no spine, and B, it's clicks. It gets views. It's the media business. So there's so many reasons why the media platform it. Economics, too complicated. NHS stuff, too complicated. And I saw Zoe Gardner with Ben Kentish, and he was like, oh, it's the third biggest issue for people. And she was like, yeah, it's because that's all you guys talk about. And I was like, oh, that's kind of a burn, Zoe. I'm not going to lie, because it's kind of true. Like, people are like, Nigel Farage, like, when are we going to talk about immigration? It's like, motherfucker, you haven't stopped talking about immigration for like 10 years. Like, you talked about
Literally.
it during Brexit, like during early 2010s. You did it during Brexit. You stopped, you disappeared, and you came back talking about immigration, dog. Sit outside for this one. Like, that's all they talk about. Oh, there's too many immigrants here. It's like, okay, why are jobs not being filled then? What's going on? Like, have a good conversation around why are we looking at record vacancies and stuff like that at a certain period. It doesn't make sense. Like, we've had so many people with expertise leave. The universities are complete shambles now. There's so many kind of EU professors leaving, things like that. Even Oxford is struggling. Oxford and Cambridge are struggling with professors. Like, that's nuts. These two of the biggest universities in the world
In the world, yeah.
struggling to hold on to people because of Brexit changes and things like that. It's nuts. So the immigration is too easy for the media. Like, how you're talking about like the things earlier, right? The channel crossings earlier. They would literally go out there and film the channel crossings. They wouldn't talk to anyone on the boat or anyone landing. They're like, oh, look at these brown people. Look at that. Oh, so many of them on that boat. Oh, it's so dangerous, this crossing. And it's like, ask yourself, if there are people from Afghanistan on that boat, why are they coming here? Is it because we told them to come here after we promised to protect them and we didn't? When we let the Taliban back in, and Priti Patel was saying something like, oh, just come here and seek asylum. It's like, but how do you get here? Can you claim asylum via embassies? No.
I
Can you do
mean,
it via other means? No. So can you fly here? No. So how are you going to get here?
how shitty is a media, by the way, that when Priti Patel at Home Secretary at the time says, we are, flagshipping this Afghan resettlement scheme, we're going to set up a resettlement scheme to rescue our Afghan, co-fighters who helped us take down the Taliban. And then she gets every headline in every paper for that. That scheme never existed, never happened. And there's no follow-up story saying, oh, that thing that we did a headline that was going to happen, it didn't happen.
Dominic Raab. Oh yeah, I didn't go to the beach. The sea was closed.
I was just thinking
Yeah,
that. I was
that
just
was
thinking
how is the
that.
sea closed? That doesn't even make sense. I've never seen a time, apart from in England actually, because of the sewage. I've never heard of a time the sea was closed. I can't imagine Cyprus has that problem. The sea was closed,
Oh
and then
my
someone
God.
made a funny Spider-Man meme about it. That's why I remember it.
I forgot about that. That
Yeah,
was next level.
and like the only reason we know that is because of a select committee. The media are just honestly so bad. And when politicians get a really bad story, like the stuff around Labour keeping the two-child cap in, you just don't send a minister on. You're like, oh, that's a shame, guys. There was no minister here to talk to us today. I'm like, cool. We're going to do a one-hour story about why they didn't turn up and which specific policy has made them cower out. And we're going to talk about the impacts of it because we know things like the two-child cap. Kids in England are becoming shorter now because they're not getting the stuff they need.
What, in height
It,
or in
yeah, in
learning?
height, yeah.
Yeah.
In height, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, let's discuss that. And just the last one with a lot of the immigration stuff, there was like, when the Bibli Stockholm was like, they were pushing that as an idea. There was a lady on TV, it's like, oh, they're taking resources from us. And they were talking about how they get NHS dentistry and we don't. It's like, don't ask why they get it, ask why you don't. Because I get it, because I'm very lucky, because I saw the register and I just went for it. But a lot of people aren't lucky. So ask yourself, why don't you get access to basic services? That's the obvious question. Don't say, oh, they have something I don't have, therefore I don't want them to have it, because that's
Also,
the dumb.
the reason they were doing dental checks on asylum seekers was to try and determine whether they were actually the age that they were doing it on young ones to try and determine if they were actually the age they said they were. Asylum seekers don't get like free dental care. They get dental invasive dental scans to try and treat minors as adults.
That's even funnier because right wingers kept complaining like half these people aren't the age they claim they are. And so when they get the care they need, they're like, nah, fuck that. He's got a dentist and I don't.
It's like they constantly complain that they're getting rooms that have flat screen TVs in them, as if there's any other TV in the 21st in 2025 than a flat screen TV. Like,
You can't
you
blame
want to
like
get a TV
someone.
from the 1980s, those big square
Yeah.
fuckers
No color, from the
black and
fucking
white.
tip, which
Like, you
probably end
can't.
up costing more to go to the
I
tip to
mean, like,
resurrect that fucking
that
thing
is
than a
so
brand
true.
new
Like,
flat screen.
what is not flat screen anymore?
And you can't complain like there's immigrants, the reasons you can't see a dentist when the Americans been memeing us since the 90s. There's that Simpsons clip where Ralph Wiggum goes to the dentist and he's like, why are you telling lies in my dental room? And he's like, shall I show you the Great British Book of Smiles? And I'm just like, oh, fuck off, guys. Like, actually die. And I'm like, I can't even argue against that. But it's like, we have bad dentistry. We have done for ages. So it's like, they're not the reason you can't see a dentist or a doctor, because most of these people are like probably late teens, early 20s, they're not going to see a doctor because they're healthy. The reason you can't see a doctor is because our medical system's croaked. Like, if people actually looked at why we have such shit facilities, it's not because of immigrants. It's because the government took all the money out and they blamed immigrants. That's how we got Brexit in the first place. They're like, oh, it's Romanians. And you're like, no, it's not, though, is it?
Look over there. Look over there.
It's the cookie meme.
These are all what the Nazis were saying.
Yeah.
This is what they were saying.
Yeah, it is.
You can't get a job because of that person who you don't know, or that person with a different religion. That's why you can't get a job. That's why you can't get a house. It's verbatim. They're literally saying the same shit.
It's because it's
just... No one talks about it.
It's easy,
no
though.
No one talks about it.
We blame the EU for decades about stuff that happened in England that the EU had nothing to do with. And then the ironic video of the guy saying, what's the EU ever done for us? And there was like a little thing, like I'm not sure what exactly it was. I think it's like a water barrier. And he goes, oh, funded by the EU, and the camera zooms in. And if I'm the journalist, I'm literally pointing at the thing and going that. And there was like a question time. They had like in a theatre, I think it was. And they were talking about, oh, what's the EU ever done for us? And it's like, well, they built this theatre. It's like, did anyone ask if we ever need it? It's like, you're using it, so clearly you need it. Like, you can question the utility of a theatre outside of, you know, the times question time goes there, but you know, clearly it doesn't sit empty, you know, 364 days. It's just open one day in a year. You're like, fuck me, guys, like, how are you this dumb? But then again, this is the country that Googled what is the EU the day after the referendum, and it was trending. And you just like, we don't take voting seriously here because we always elect clowns. The one serious vote that we got, we fumbled it. That's what happened.
I would take it a step further. I think that there's a big love from a certain class of having poverty. Then you have to have a second job, you got your kids. If you have kids, and then you're fucked. You have no time to go off and research half this shit or listen to a podcast or anything else because your time's totally eaten up. And so when it comes to the election, either you don't know or you don't give a shit because you don't feel it's going to change anything. So there were a couple of stories that came out, Helena, in regards to the treatment of women. And I think it'd be good to talk about that in the fact that it was interesting reading the stories that you provided to us and going, that just doesn't look right. In other professions, that wouldn't have happened. Or isn't it funny they've sort of made it out that way and then they've not started going on a big rampage?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fill us in.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think the first story that I want to talk about is Lisa Smith. She's 43 from Slough and she was shot outside a pub in Kent on last Friday evening, which was Valentine's Day. And she was shot and the suspect is Edvard Smith. And, you know, he's being described as a man known to Lisa, but it's largely known this was her partner or possibly husband. You know, when I see a story like this, I always freeze up because I'm worried about how it's going to go. And the reason I'm worried is because I saw that story and I would instantly think, that was her partner or ex-partner. But I'm not sure everybody would think that way. But that is because the media fails to show us the wider context. And that context is that nearly half of women murdered by their partner or their ex-partner are killed less than a month after separation. And 79% are killed within 6 months of separation and 90% killed within a year of separation. And the even wider context of that is that every 3 days, a woman is murdered by her partner or ex-partner. So there is a huge gulf in the media that we're not really being informed on. And the reason why I'm so kind of passionate about this is because the way that the media reports on these deaths directly influences public understandings of domestic abuse and actually furthermore than that, and on how we can present it. And so when I how we can prevent it. So when I see a murder of somebody like Lisa Smith being reported, I'm bracing myself then for the list of excuses that the media are going to come up with to justify this woman's death. And already reported. So bear in mind this happened on Valentine's Day, so it's not too long ago. Mm. Already reported is that the man who killed Lisa phoned his friend after he shot her. And the friend said, oh, he must have been suffering a breakdown. He, you know, he was so greatly affected by the death of his father 2 years ago. The BBC wrote, Oh, those close to the couple say that they were bewildered by the shooting. The couple were the life and soul of the party. We don't know why he has done this. And these lines get pushed in the media again and again. These lines are presented by fact. Their friend said this. Their friend said that. Well, here's another fact. With fatal domestic abuse, death marks the end point to a sustained period of coercive control. It's not out of the blue. It's not sudden. It's not because he had a breakdown or he had too much to drink. You know, that friend saying, oh, I'm baffled. I have no idea why he's done this. Yeah, that's true. You may be entirely unaware of the situation because coercive control thrives in the darkness. It's hidden. So, you know, your best friend or that your mate or your neighbor or that person down the road. Yeah, they probably don't know what's happening. And I think it was a couple of years ago now. There was a primary school teacher who was murdered by her ex-fiance. And the media, I think it was the Telegraph, ran this whole piece about the ex-fiance's friends said he was the human equivalent of a golden retriever. Okay, he murdered his fiance with a claw hammer. I don't think that's golden retriever behavior.
Why do you think it is done in that way?
I think possibly it's too shocking for people to confront the fact that that men close to them are capable of violence, potentially.
Theory as well.
Yeah.
And it's one that ties into pretty much most of the topics, you know, we've covered. It is easier to emotionalize than it is to educate. And this is a really big problem we see, especially when we have a commercial media that, you know, cannot survive without clicks, without engagement. It's easier to emotionalize than to educate. And so like with immigration, you know, it's much easier to blame a housing crisis on scary foreign people than it is to talk about planning law and capitalism and whatnot. It is easier to blame a heinous act of violence in which a woman is killed on a crazy romantic feud or a
spurned lover or a jilted lover
than it is to point to a systemic chronic cultural problem in which like women's lives and women's bodies are commodified. So I think that that is one of the main diagnoses I have for our media across topics. The thing is, in a democracy only functions if you have a media that succeeds in educating, right? If you have an informed votership, right? That's what we were talking about, manufactured consent. Consent is only consent in a democracy if it's informed. And that is the media's job. And so you have to educate. And like with the documentary, go back to where you came from, what that was trying to work out how to use emotion and entertainment in order to educate, like how to educate by stealth. But as we're seeing with this story on domestic abuse, far too often the media leans into the emotional clickbait rather than the educational content.
Yeah, because I have another kind of example of that, because by the way, you know, this story was just one example of a story being of a woman being murdered by her partner during doing the news rounds today. And just to give an example for you of what Matilda just said, you know, another story today was a man who stabbed his girlfriend in the chest in a railway car park in Crawley has been found guilty of murder. And, you know, the Sun calls him a monster, which in a way I understand, because it is a monstrous thing to do, to stab your girlfriend, you know, and kill her. But when we call men like that monsters, we other them and we, you know, we sort of make them out to be this like fairy tale like creature or this fantasy creature that is so evil and is so far removed from the people that we know in our lives. But actually, in reality, they're not. He's a man who's grown up in a world where, you know, he has been socialized to believe he has control over women.
Makes me wonder if, because I've watched a lot of stuff on serial killers for a variety of reasons, and it is interesting when you said the word monster, it is always like Ted Bundy the monster, or it's always like the one that comes to mind, or Jack the Ripper or the Yorkshire Ripper is the monster. and it is othering, you don't hear that terminology being used with immigration. And isn't it funny if you then flip that around and just said man kills woman? If you repeated that on the numbers that you gave on a daily basis as a headline, it would very rapidly change the discourse of conversation.
100%.
And yet it's not. And I always find it funny with Farage, you know, going on about immigration, and yet you never go, well, 90% of crime is caused by men. From the statistics that I've seen, it's 90%. So you're going, why isn't he, if he's so concerned about crime, why is that not brought up? Why is he not saying 90% of crime is caused by men? We need to do something about that. But you never hear that from him. I mean, he's a two-faced son of a gun. So it's not surprising. But it just makes you go, as you said, would you like a little interesting history thing on how things don't change?
Always.
So during COVID, I set up a thing where I teach people history, but on like conspiracies or the unusual. So whether it's a JFK assassination or Jack the Ripper. And we started off on Jack the Ripper. And one of the things that I found really interesting, I read, I'm going to have to pause here just to get a book because I don't want to get her name wrong. Ah, there it is.
He's just flexing his book collection on us. Didn't hear that.
It looks impressive.
You're fired.
Oh, Labour's got new workers' rights. You can't do that, pal.
Hayley Reubenhull. She talks about the canonical five, which are the five that are attributed to Jack the Ripper. And one of the things I found really interesting from that was that, according to Hayley's research, only two of them were sex workers, and the other three weren't. But because they were all out late at night, they were all deemed sex workers. But the other interesting thing then came, and that's part of the reason they think they didn't catch him. The other interesting thing then happened in the 1970s with the Yorkshire Ripper. But basically, any woman that was out late at night was attributed as a sex worker, and that's who he targeted. Turns out he was targeting women during the day, but they didn't attribute it to him because they thought he was only targeting sex workers. Which means for almost 100 years, the police force, which was male-dominated, didn't change their thinking. And just assumed that if you're a woman out at night, you are up to about no good.
That is literally the same now. That is literally the same now. Like any kind of police advice that comes out, you know, we saw this after Sarah Everard was kidnapped and raped and murdered. And the police advice was, don't go out late at night. And if you are out late at night and you need help, flag down a bus. Does anyone remember that?
Yeah,
flag
I remember
down
that.
A bus?
Ugh, I used to live off buses, and I could be going home as a 16-year-old girl at like midnight. And if I was the only one at the bus stop, the bus driver would be like, ugh, can't be arsed, and just drive off, and I'll be waiting 20 minutes for the next one. So fuck that.
Run into the road and wave it down. Stop it.
That sounds as dangerous as someone bus. Trying to attack you. Like a bus is gonna kill you, like straight up.
Yes.
Like what are you gonna do at that point? Like
But in the 70s, when this happened, it was the same sort of thing. Women should stay at home. That was the message that was being broadcast on TV with the Yorkshire Ripper. And you're like, but the men are causing the problem. So women then went out onto the street and protested, being like, what the fuck is wrong with you? We're not the fucking problem.
Right. Yeah. Reclaim these streets. Did that again.
But Matilda and I actually kind of identified, because look, we talk about this so much, and actually the media does talk about, it may not be in the right way, but the media does talk about violence against women and girls so much. But Matilda and I actually in a recent episode were saying, you know, there were more stories about violence against women coming up in the media, and we were going to do another episode on it. And we were like, come on, we're doing another episode. We're going to say the same things. What are we doing wrong here? Like what are we missing here? And what we were missing was that the conversations really about violence against women and girls that we should be having are with men. And if we, as you said before, reframed the language, if we called it male violence against women and girls, it actually almost entirely becomes a whole new topic. So we ended up doing an episode with men about male violence. And it was, you know, so much more engaging, and it kind of relates to what we were talking about before, which is about like bridging that divide, because I don't want to push men away by sitting here and going all men have this and all men do that, and you know, then all that comes back at me is hashtag not all men, and it's just impossible to have a conversation. I want to bring men into this conversation and talk to them about loneliness and ego and, you know, isolation and social media and Andrew Tate. And I want to like speak about those things to them. So, because, you know, if men are the problem, they're the solution as well.
There's some really, I totally agree. And there's some really interesting, quite shocking, disturbing facts as well coming in from the youth generation. Not only do they seem to want to join the EU and want a dictator at the same time, which is a fucking weird set of stats.
The USSR, it makes sense.
Yeah. It'll works out.
Apparently that study, by the way, was complete bullshit.
Yeah. It's quite funny though to quote it every so often. I think the stat that blew my mind, I think 60% of under 25-year-old men have no interest, this is in the US, have no interest in a relationship or sex. That's that's fucked. That's a serious fucking issue if that's true, if those stats are true. I don't even know where to begin with that. They don't want to be with anyone.
We've all just been shocked into silence. Okay. Yeah, because there's a lot of factors at play. That's why.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors in play. I'm like, well, polls, 90% of polls published are bullshit. We did an episode on asexuality a week ago. There's actually a lot of people who just like don't have a sexual orientation. The other factor, which is definitely a factor, is that we have a generation that is increasingly isolated, increasingly online, increasingly disengaged from personal interaction.
And increasingly under the dictatorship of, you know, Trump and Musk and God knows, you know.
In some respects also, you know, that generation is one of the most engaged, socially engaged, activist, self-educated populations because of the information that has been opened up. So there's a flip side to that as well. Like you will get bored of how tirelessly optimistic I am when we're talking about how history is repeating itself. I'm a big believer it's, you know, two steps forwards, one step back. You can live during a step back, you can live during a step forward, but you've got to keep, you know, putting one foot in front of the other. So I'm always going to find the positive. And I think that is also important to focus on, because there's a generation that can also give us a lot of hope for the future.
I think we'll end on that note.
That's a much nicer. I was going to bring this all round back to Trump and talk about the day that Trump was elected was the day that I realized people really did not give a shit about women. But actually, let's end on what Matilda said. It's much nicer.
Change happens. And, you know, like we talked about it with the documentary with Jess and Nathan, you know, they changed their minds. It's just two people, but for those two people, like the world is changed. And that's what we've got to set ourselves realistic targets in this fight. You are not looking for grand sweeping solutions that can save the world. You are just looking for what you can do in your corner. And well, this conversation is part of it. Everyone listening is part of that. And maybe can I plug that we have Jess and Nathan coming on the podcast this week at some point, any point.
Do you?
That would be amazing. This is the first time that the three of us have all been together and we'll all be, you know, talking about it. So on Media Storm on Friday this week, Jess and Nathan will be with me and Helena and we'll be talking through everything.
That's amazing. Thank you so much to our guests. Thank you to my co-host. If you liked and enjoyed this video, which I assume you did by getting this far into it, hit that like and subscribe button. Once again, thank you to everyone. Hail the lava lamp.
All hail.
All hail the lava lamp.
Madge, you never do
it. All right, hail the lava lamp.
I don't believe you, Madge. Say it again.
No. I already said it. You got me on clip. That's fine.
Next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.
Okay, I'm going to give you, because of everything going on in the world at the moment, I'm going to put you all into a bunker situation where you're going to be down there for 5 years. Helena, you've got a choice. You could take one person with you, a doctor, a farmer, or a nuclear engineer. Who would you pick? If you can give a why, that's helpful. A doctor, a farmer, a nuclear engineer. Just you and them, 5 years in a bunker.
Do you at any point come out of the bunker?
After 5 years, that's it.
Is there any context on the situation of why we are in the bunker?
Trump.
He needs context. More context.
I'm a journalist. Trump's good enough.
I need context. Doctor, farmer, or
nuclear engineer?
I'm going to take nuclear engineer.
What? You think that'd be useful?
Possibly, but okay, if we're in the bunker, I'm not sure what the farmer is going to farm. And if we are, and the doctor, like, probably if we're living in a bunker for 5 years, I'd be like, just kill me. Like, I don't want to be healthy. So, you know, my asthma will send me out anyway. So,
but where are you going to find a nuclear engineer? Trump fired them all.
That's why they're in the bunker.
Yeah, that's why they're there.
It makes sense. Think about it. Also, they got nothing better to do.
They knew it was coming.
If I'd been the British government, I would have gone and find those 20 nuclear engineers and given them contracts every year like that. I would have snapped them up.
I bet you China's going to do it. They'll be like, hey, guys.
Okay.
They're listening.
Matilda, you're three.
I'm scared.
David Attenborough, and he's going to live for 10 years. Keanu Reeves, Sabrina Carpenter.
Sorry, can I just pause this and say you have asked this question to the wrong person because Matilda knows fuck all about celebrities culture.
I feel really proud of myself. I actually know who all of them are.
You know who Sabrina Carpenter is?
I can tell you it won't be her. Like, it won't be her.
I'm going to go out and say it's Keanu Reeves.
The fact that Sabrina Carpenter is like a superstar and that's the music people listen to, this is one of the most... This is when I'm like, wow, I really don't get anything about the world and people. So not her. I think Keanu Reeves is a bit of a psycho. I don't know why I have this. I can't remember why I think this. I think he might be like a bit of a fascist or something. Wait, I can't just say this.
No, don't be dissing the king. No, don't be dissing the king.
I mean, I know he's. I know as an artist, he's epic. Like, right, I know Matrix. Sure,
he's a pretty cool guy.
I even watch the John Wick one with the dog. The ones with the dog. That's John Wick, right?
Yeah.
So, guys, I'm clued in. You know what? It's David Attenborough. It is David Attenborough. Who am I kidding? I'm just going to speak from the heart.
Yeah, all I'm going to say is, on record, Keanu Reeves condemns fascist attack on Italian film group. So, you've been misinformed. Right? Don't be dissing the guy who voices Shadow the Hedgehog.
Stop spreading misinformation.
He voices the best Shadow interpretation I've ever seen. Okay, do not disrespect my man.
I think the disrespect is coming from watching like John Wick. 1, 2, 3, 4. I think the disrespect is coming point on the John Wick journey.
Someone killed his dog and now he killed
people. I've had enough Keanu Reeves for my life.
Madge, three.
I'm going to shaft it.
Pretty much. Alex Jones, Donald Trump, Kanye West.
God. Is this current Kanye West or cool Kanye West where he's making good beats like No Church in the Wild? And
who do you think? Listen to the others in the lineup. Which one do you think you'll be given?
Hates black people.
Oh, 2000s. 2000s.
No, you don't get him. No. You get current.
No, he was cool, man. He made really good beats. He did the backstory behind that song Gold Digger is so funny, where he went and he managed to get an interview with Jamie Foxx and they were in the studio and he plays a beat and they're like, what do you think of that? They're like, oh, that's really good. He's like, that's garbage. And then
I think we know who your answer is.
No, it's Alex Jones.
Why?
Because he plays a character. That's why. And he makes me laugh. They're putting chemicals in the water to turn the freaking frogs gay. I was like, this guy, endless hours entertainment.
That's hilarious. I don't know if you remember, but we've got that in one of our... Every episode, we make a montage of clips with our like theme tune. There's always like really epic and ridiculous clips from the media. And we have had... making the frogs gay, whatever it was. That was it.
Yeah, and you don't forget the fifth dimension and Obama's a demon. I'd laugh at that shit for hours. I'll be like, all right, Alex, what's your opinion on Hillary Clinton? And I'm like, here's why she's a demon. I'm like, I'm so here for this.
I guess by that point in the apocalypse, like, there's nothing to lose. You may as well just say it and laugh.
He'll tell me the apocalypse isn't real to go out of the bunker and I'd die. I'll be like, yes.
Okay.
Do we get to do you?
we can come up with one suggestion each, I guess.
If
one
you're quick enough.
Okay, quick.
Lava lamp.
The obvious choice. Boris Johnson.
Nathan from Go Back to Where You Came From.
Big Nate, the Yeti.
You know what? By the end of it, Nathan was all right. I get that sense of humor. That's my old man's sense of humor. I get it. So if it's Nathan or Boris Johnson or my lamp.
Yeah.
You guys let him off easy with that one. I got shafted. This is diabolical.
Well, not really. I mean, that'll give me magical powers. It'll probably get rid of the nuclear. I mean, it does everything. It is the lamp. You know,
I should have said why we have a cult.
All hail.
I'd probably choose Nathan. Nathan seems to be reformed enough that I could get on with that.
Yes. Okay. Go Nate.
Go Nate. Final thing. Twilight Zone, Black Mirror. Madge, you're in the bunker. You have... so awful. Right, you got a choice. You can either listen to Farage's autobiography once a day, but you've got to listen to the whole thing. Or, if you want to eat, you've got to debate with Piers Morgan every time you want to eat.
What's the food on the menu?
Whatever you want.
Oh, how long does the debate with Piers Morgan have to be?
Until he agrees.
Yeah, until you reach an agreement.
Oh, shit. Farage's autobiography, it could be like, oh yeah, the blimp, he was in like some sort of balloon and it crashed and then he nearly died and I'll be like, yes, and then it's like he lived, I was like, oh, I'd go with Piers Morgan.
Strong.
Okay.
Now, it's going to be cold.
Yeah.
Helena, okay, so you've got a choice. You've got an AI in the bunker, but it's got the personality of Andrew Tate.
Oh, fuck me.
Or when you come out of the bunker, the only man left on the planet is Jacob Rees-Mogg.
This is so horrendous. Like, this is the stuff like nightmares are made of. AI personality of Andrew Tate. Do you know what? I think I would pick that.
No.
No, no, listen, because Jacob Rees-Mogg, even though he looks like a Victorian ghost, is real, but the AI is not real. And I might go crazy down in the bunker with just the AI, especially if it's got the personality of Andrew Tate, but maybe I could like try and convince it otherwise or like try and play tricks on it. Basically, I would have 5 years to see if I could beat AI and that's worth it.
Said, I think I can save him.
Yeah. Toxic.
Never heard that.
I think I can save him. I can change him, guys.
I can fix him.
Matilda.
Yeah, okay, go on.
You can only take one movie down, and you gotta, what, it's the only movie you can take down, you're down there for 5 years. What movie would you take?
God. I need multiple choice. That's like,
no.
One movie.
That's it. That's all you get to watch.
I can't name a single movie.
I'm telling you, you keep giving her the wrong question.
It's training day. Bad. Training day or something.
I'm so bad at pop culture.
I love how
my favorite movie is it's actually not very PC. It's Leon the Professional.
Apocalypse. Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I'd take an animation, a cozy animation, and it's gonna be The Lion King, because I will never be too cool to sing along to every lyric of The Lion King, and also I solidly like had full crush on like Mufasa growing up. And there'll be no one left to judge me for it.
Fair play, man.
Yeah, you rescued that one.
Simba's hot.